I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. I am currently in Mexico. Taking some time out before the touring starts again. And a couple of weeks ago, I sat down with Luke and Katie from Elder Island. They're a band from Bristol, or they're based out of Bristol. They're just an amazing band. Absolutely love their music. It's very like chill, electronica, amazing songs, amazing lyrics. Amazing voices as well, and amazing musicians. So I sat down with Kate and Luke from the band and just kind of spoke about everything that they do. I can't wait to hear if you enjoy this podcast. I love the conversation. So without further ado, Elder Island. We're live. How's it going, guys?
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, good. Thank you, man. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I'm actually really tired today for some reason. And I don't know if it's this weather. It's like fucking just like...
You're the weather, man.
Yeah. Humid.
Luke came in today and you were complaining, weren't you? You were like, I could eat this air.
Yeah. It's hard to breathe.
Yeah. Where are you guys in Bristol?
We are, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
St. Paul's, Montpellier.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. I love Bristol.
It's pretty small and central anyway, isn't it, really, when you're in the city.
Yeah, I had lunch in Werburgh's this afternoon. St. Werburgh's.
And where did you go?
Some like Lebanese place. It's pretty good.
Yarrow's?
Yes. There. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you have?
We all kind of like ate a lot. And you know, like when you have this like massive lunch and you regret it and you're just like, oh my God. But I had like an onion bhaji and some chicken pakora wrap, and then my mate also ordered some like halloumi fries, and I was like, why, dude? Why?
Fries always a filler. Yeah. And that'll be a tribute to your sleepiness right now.
Exactly. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. Like, I love your music. I love what you guys done. I've been like following you. Obviously, I'm good mates with Ross from years ago, and he's kind of been talking about you for a while, and I don't know when he put me onto you. I think it was like a while ago. And I love the music, and I love the new album. It's great.
No, thank you for reposting it. I think that's how I saw
it. Was that how it came across?
Well, that's how I kind of like knew your name, and then yeah, because you'd reposted it, and I was like, that's sweet.
It's weird because we're like, I'm not Bristol, but I've grown up around Bristol. And it's just like amazing how much good music comes from that city. But also, like, you guys have kind of, it feels like you've kind of stepped out of the Bristol scene as of, I don't know, without sounding disrespectful, because this isn't disrespectful at all, it's kind of a compliment, but there's a lot of people in Bristol that start in Bristol and just stay in Bristol and kind of don't step out of the Bristol kind of clique. And you guys have.
Yeah, because it's kind of cozy. I guess we're always ferreting away on our own, aren't we?
Yeah.
We like to enjoy it in our like social lives, but actually our ties to the Bristol scene is maybe a bit more kind of...
We're a bit separated, aren't we?
Yeah.
Really.
I'm exactly the same. Like, for me, it was like, I love the heritage of Bristol and I love what Bristol's about, but I just didn't want to get stuck in it. I think that's what can happen. Say that again.
How do you mean stuck in it?
I think there's a lot of like, I don't know, it's this like, the Bristol scene is amazing. Mm. But there's a lot of really, really strong artists in Bristol that almost just kind of get, don't leave the Bristol scene and kind of just get stuck in that Bristol. And not saying that's a bad thing, but I think if you want to make a full-time living out of being an artist, you kind of have to spread your wings a little bit.
Yeah, like you say, yeah, step out, I guess.
Yeah, but you guys have just announced a tour in America, right?
Yeah, we have, as of a few days ago. Tickets on sale on Friday.
How's that all going?
It's good. Like there's been some trouble with the old visa because they've cancelled all embassy meetings.
It's the worst, isn't it?
And it's like, what? How do we get one? Yeah. So it's all a bit like edgy, but there's ways around it.
How are you going to go about doing it? Are you doing the NIE route?
Yeah, NIE. So I guess you can't, that's why you kind of have to put the tickets first, so then you can kind of prove. That. Oh, I don't know. It's an absolute nightmare.
But the response is good. You know, we've had so many people be like, hey, why aren't you in this city? Or like, I want to get tickets for New York and San Francisco and loads of other bits, which is really nice.
We're looking for, I just can't wait to go back. We had such fun on the last one.
Because I think you guys were in San Francisco when I was playing a show in San Francisco. I could be wrong, but Ross was there and I met Ross for drinks. And I think you guys were there. This was like...
We were only there for one night, so it would have been to play the show.
Yeah. Do you prefer touring over there?
Oh.
In what way?
Oh. I don't know. Like, do you have like a bigger fan base over there, or
you have a bigger fan base? Yeah, but on Spotify, it statistically says that it's like 51-52% or something more North America.
They got more people.
Yeah,
they've
got more people. And that's the cool thing, you know, it's so spread out and everyone has, you know, very different but very similar vibes, you know.
At least it is a nice spread, which is good. I think it's different. Wherever you play, it's always different. Mm. Even like when you do a Europe tour, like it's different playing in like the Netherlands compared to playing in France compared to playing in Germany.
Yeah.
And like, those differences are huge. And it's kind of the same in US and even England, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think England depends, like, the more north you go, the harder they party, really. And it's just
You're not wrong, man. Yeah, that's a really good way of summing it up, actually.
Yeah, we've had some wild Glasgow.
I've never played in Glasgow, but all my mates that have, they're like, they're just fucking mental.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's just on another level. It's like Dublin, higher spectrum.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, but the Dubliners can.
Always give it.
What is it that they drink in Scotland? Is it Buckfast?
Yeah.
What is that shit?
It's a fortified wine or something?
I'm pretty sure.
What even does that mean? Does it mean it's just wine for hard people?
It was made by the monks of Buckfast, right?
It was, yes.
That's their shtick, isn't it? That it was like, I guess, bootleg booze that the monks made.
Yeah. Was it like brewed twice? I don't actually know.
Does it taste any good? Have you tried it?
Tried it, but I was hammered at the time. So
someone always pulls out the Buckfast when you're pissed already, and you're like, I don't need that right
now. Yeah, that's going to just destroy all brain cells.
But I'll have a cup.
Yeah,
I do really want to do it over there. I really want to go to Glasgow and tour.
Do it, definitely.
I played St. Andrews once, which was the most random show ever.
The golf course?
Yeah, literally. No, literally. It was like St. Andrews University, and they put me in a hotel on the golf course, or like just, and I was like, what is it? And it was like the weirdest show. I was like 17. It was like years ago. But I'm just like, this is the most random place to be having a rave. Because like St. Andrews is quite a high-end university, if you know what I mean. Like the royals go there. So you're like, this is kind of interesting to see a load of really posh people just raving. But they love the rave.
Great.
where's like the most random place you played, and like where you get out and you're like, what, where are these people from?
Inglefest. Do you remember?
Where's that?
It was like a festival put on by a guy, and it
Josh
was like a
Ingle? Yeah, his name Josh so. Ingle.
Did he but it was basically in his back garden.
Yeah.
And we'd been doing all these big festivals. That was the year like we played Boomtown. I can't remember. Yeah, yeah, we played Boomtown, and then we turn up at this one. But we had the most incredible time. Like, I'm completely not saying it was bad, but it was in his back garden, and his dad drove our gear to where this little stage was in like a track, in a little lawnmower
with a trailer
on the back. Yeah. And we were like, okay.
Do you remember like the power went off halfway through the show because it started raining, or it had rained before? And I don't know, something, the fuses were outside, or it shorted like right in the middle of like dropping like bamboo or something.
Yeah.
And we were just like,
great. Right.
People are like running around.
10 minutes to turn all of our gear on. And, you know, like with NPCs, just like, right, load up the thing.
Oh, no. Do you guys, I didn't know you played like electronically with all of that stuff as well.
Yeah, it's always been hardware, like. But yeah, like make sure the loops are all empty.
Do you ever use backing tracks?
No.
Fully live.
Yeah.
That's fucking brave.
Yeah.
Like way more enjoyable.
Keeps you on
your toes.
Yeah.
I guess it's a little bit more fun as well, like when you're actually playing live, because there's so many people that just play backing tracks and you're just like, this is boring.
I find that stressful because like you'd have to keep to it. Mm. And you know, well, I suppose you wouldn't be doing much, so you wouldn't have much to keep to it. But it's like, you know, with us, if like someone's getting a loop in, and then if you don't get it in, you're like looking at someone being like,
keep going.
And then you get it in, and then you go in. Like, yeah, there's kind of a sort of, it's a bit more flexible.
So do you work with like loop pedals and shit like that as well?
Loads of loopers, yeah.
I need to come and see you guys play. Big time.
Do it. We'll put you on the guest list.
Yeah. I hope so. Now we're in America. When I'm in America, let's do it. Because I live over there most of the time. So
whereabouts?
Detroit.
Oh, beauty.
Yeah.
Enough of an audience in Detroit.
I spread the love in Detroit.
We would love to do a show in Detroit. Right, that'd be sick. I just like to go to Detroit as well.
Man, you're always welcome. I've got a spare room. Come and stay.
Yeah, I might take you up on that.
Yeah,
that's
very well.
Detroit's an interesting place. It's like, obviously, you know, it's the history in Motown and techno and all of that and Motor City, but it's a very like blue collar city. And it's got like quite a lot of crime and a lot of poverty as well. So there's like, it's very mixed emotions. Detroit itself, it's like a city that kind of was the wealthiest city in America and then kind of just got left behind and went bankrupt. I think it was the only city in America that went bankrupt. So like, but now it's kind of like on the up, and a few big businesses have like gone in and like invested in downtown and things like that. And it's a cool city. It's a really cool city, and the music scene's like, it's still a very small music scene. Like, people think, obviously, because of its history, it's, like, unreal and, like, people are raving all the time. But there's only really, like, five really strong venues in Detroit that everyone tours around. But it's cool. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, totally.
Are you doing Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a 4.5-hour drive from there.
It's just never on. We're always... next show after.
It's like,
we haven't had time ever to stay in Chicago either side so far. It's just like show, move on to the next one, or three in a row.
Do you prefer touring like that, where it's just stop start?
I mean, obviously for the money, we would
yeah,
we have to do it. Yeah, but like, yeah, if it were up to me, I'd we'd stay a day more spread on all of them.
Yeah,
I love when we have our days off.
Yeah, it's the that's the best part of touring. Yeah. It's like that's when you get to add in the side bit of travel.
Yeah, want to do a hike? Yeah.
It's the one thing that all of us as kind of touring people, we never actually see the place that we're actually going to, and it's weird, and it's kind of like we all love to travel but never actually properly travel apart from getting on a plane.
No.
And it's like, why don't we? I think COVID's helped, like, made me realize that I need to do that.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Last time we went as well, like the first half of the tour, I just remember not thinking about it at all. I was just so focused on doing the show, making sure that, like, I was getting it right every night, and just forgetting about what I was actually doing, until like a friend of ours texted me when we were in Minneapolis, and he was like, "You're going to Prince's house," and I just like totally forgot that that's where we were going, because I was just so sucked into just us playing.
Yeah, show, and then, travel, show, yeah, travel.
And so I just remember going, right, booking tickets. So it's just like, we are going to Prince's house.
The bus driver is like, everybody, we're going to Prince's house.
We are off, like, definitely.
So do you do a tour bus?
We did. It was the first time I'd ever done it, and it wasn't quite a bus. It's a, I don't know.
What is it? A bandwagon.
A bandwagon.
It's so, an RV.
Okay, an RV, yeah.
Like converted, with little like tiny coffins, very bumpy.
Yeah, it doesn't have the suspension, but it
made such a big difference. The first time we went to America, we just killed ourselves basically. By the end, like, I lost my voice in DC. It was really bad.
I've never been so ill.
We were just all like done. But but then the bandwagon revolutionized everything. It just means that you like wake up in this place, and at least you have like a day, or at least until like sound checking. So you can like wander around.
Do you tour with like a team, or is it just you guys that are just like setting everything up and doing all of that?
Very small team, especially in America. It's just us and our tour manager.
Oh, amazing. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
a lot.
People, and I think this is the thing, is like, as a DJ, it's fucking easy for me to just rock up with a USB stick, literally like turn up with this in a pair of headphones, and I'm like cracking on.
Yeah,
I wish.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're like doing like fully like instruments, NPCs, loop pedals. You're like, you're just causing extra stress, but sounds good.
It's more fun I guess on the day, but I wish we could maybe get the load in a little bit down. There's some heavy cases, and there's quite a lot of them.
Yeah, I bet. Do you have like a sound, is your tour manager like sound guy or girl?
No, we've got a sound guy that does our, like, he's done Europe and UK, but we just couldn't afford to take him.
Yeah.
America. Some of the big shows, we had a pal of our tour manager that came and did the shows. But mostly we just trust the in-house in different places, which is hit and miss, but it's fine. You meet some good people.
Yeah, but do you love it? Do you love touring?
Yeah, I think, because we haven't done it in a while, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Are you nervous? Because I'm fucking shitting my pants going back touring.
Have you done any like little shows?
I've refused to do any like live streams or anything like that. I'm just like, that's not what I do it for. But yeah, I'm kind of worried. I'll be absolutely fine. But it's that first one, isn't it? Where you like haven't played for like over a year and a half, pretty much. It's gonna be. Do you get like nervous doing it or not?
Totally.
Every time.
When it's a tour and we've been doing it for a while, and when the gear's behaving and you've got the set, then I start to kind of relax a bit. But like, the first show, I'll be just like feeling like I'm going to be sick all the time. I get nervous. You're all right, aren't
I'm
you?
All right, yeah.
You have a whiskey.
I have a whiskey, I level myself out. It depends on the show, really.
Yeah.
I'm a pacer. I just pace it out. Yeah. Rather than worry, I'd be like, right, I'll just start pacing for 10 minutes before the show.
Okay.
Warming up, and then I'll be like, right, we're on. Get the first song, it's like, Yeah, just go.
I think that's it. Once you're in, aren't you? And no one actually knows if you fuck up. Like, unless everything goes off or you, like, push the stop button. Like, no one actually knows that you're fucking up.
That's me DJing. Accidentally over and over again.
Do you guys DJ as well?
Well, I attempt to and fail, but yeah. you can do.
Me and Dave are big record collectors.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a part of our set as well. Is like we love mixing and DJing, going out tonight. So we've tried to make our set blend. Like
okay.
DJ set. They're always catered to the tour or the certain shows, like how we're going to do it and make sure we've got blends in place.
Yeah, I guess that does come from like either going to that DJ culture and like watching it and then you guys doing it.
Yeah, I think it's like Chemical Brothers, right? If you see them live, it's like very similar to a DJ set, but it's not a DJ set. It's them playing live, I guess. And I guess listening to your album, it all kind of works as a body of music rather than just stop, start, here's one record and here's the next. I think that's super important, though. I don't think people like appreciate it as much as they should, maybe.
Yeah. For sure, we're big supporters of that, aren't we?
Yeah,
we're big,
totally.
You know, fighting that corner, definitely.
How do you do it when you're writing an album, though? Because it's like, I don't know, that's hard work. Because not every track's in the same key, blah, blah, blah. Like, what's the process? Or do you write an album as in, okay, this is track one, this is track two, or do you just write a shitload of records and go, this one works, this one doesn't, et cetera, et cetera?
That way, yeah. We basically just wrote loads for like 6 weeks just
solidly
in the studio, just like jamming out you know, the key, put the key in and press play so we're all synced in our stations, and we just jammed out, didn't we? Or sometimes, you know, like we've got like little drum machines that aren't MIDI, so it's like, right, let's just have a jam with this tempo and we'll figure out the proper tempo later and the proper sequencing and programming and stuff. But
I suppose the good thing for us is sometimes you'll be doing like you'll be playing one track and you'll go off on a tangent and something new will start and that's really good for like blending, because then you've got two tracks that are kind of come from the same origin but are two different separate tracks and they're easier to blend, like either in the album sense or in the live.
That makes sense. That must be fun though. I didn't realize that's how you kind of wrote. It's like the idea of it sounds so amazing, but it must be a nightmare to actually get like a. Is it hard to like get a finished product out of jams?
Oh, you hit the nail on the head. Totally. Like that.
Sometimes it works though, so fluidly, and then sometimes it is agonizing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're just like, why? What's the missing fucking thing here?
And we're such tinkerers. So we go on, and then we push it into a different shape, and then we don't like it anymore. And we have to like retract it all, and then start again. And they all go on journeys, but it's like it's kind of dictated by the song and what it needs, and we just sort of a lot of trial and error.
So who writes the lyrics?
I write the lyrics, but I do obviously consult these guys.
Salt and pepper every now and then.
It's like that's way too dark for us.
They're like, what are you talking about?
So do you literally as everyone's jamming, you just come up with a melody?
Yeah, it's kind of melody first and maybe a few odd. So when we're playing live and it's like the conception of the track, I'll have little phrases or something that might come out with a melody. So it's actually more the melody first and the rhythms. And then after we've got a bit of a track going, I'll go away and work on it a bit more to get more structure and kind of beef it out.
What's it like when you're playing a show and people sing your records back to you?
It is so incredible. It's magic, really. But it's quite overwhelming. Sometimes you're a bit like, oh god, and then also it makes you nervous, and sometimes I forget the words. They're all singing it perfectly and I'm there like shmish.
Oh yeah, this one of my goals in life is to write a record that people sing back to me. I don't know. I've done some touring with an artist called MK, who's like obviously quite commercial, and but obviously has huge like heritage in house from back in the days. And he DJs like a live performance almost. So it's like his records play. He plays all of his hits pretty much. And you're just like, oh my God, every single person in this club knows every single lyric to every single song. Yeah. And like he could literally just like turn the music off and everyone sing it back. And I'm like, that's just, it must just be amazing being alive, especially a live band when you guys are doing everything live. And oh, it just must feel amazing.
It's magic.
Yeah.
Do you sing?
I wish. I sing really badly.
No such thing. I don't think. I think people convert most people.
Winging it.
And then,
no, yeah. I wish I could sing. I have this idea that I would love to like actually play the piano properly and like do like singer songwriter vibes. But I've done like loads of sessions in lockdown with other people and like writing for other people, and it's just like the singer songwriter world is so different to producer world. I think like just writing club records is just so different. It's fun. I love it, but it's, you've got to practice that. You don't just wake up and you're good at it.
Yeah, totally.
At all.
I think we're quite good because it's like, I feel like we've got a sort of even keel of skills maybe. Skill set. Yeah.
What does everyone do then?
I suppose it all comes together in the same way. But I'm a bit more waffy words, Yeah. And you guys are like bringing a bit more like drive to it, maybe with the dance kind of aspects to make it a bit more upbeat. Yeah. I don't know. It's such a mix, actually.
There's just loads of like kit, really. So we've got drum machines. So it's a case of whoever's made the drum beat, it can go from there or it can go from keys. Katie got a synth on this project.
Did. Novation Base Station.
Yeah, which was...
That's a classic. It's a good one, that.
One. Just basically like one...
Pushing one note. And playing with the filter.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Kat. What's the cat called?
Studio Cat. Rackmount Ron.
Legend.
But yeah, we got some modular stuff. But it's kind of just wherever the melodies come from, it just feeds off from there, really. Mm. But when it's like you said, like it's a bit different singer-songwriting to producing, because when producing, there's so many layers and trying to figure it out that, like, me, Katie, and Dave, we've been producing all of these records generally on our own.
Yeah.
And so we've all basically learned Ableton in the same way.
Yeah.
Different stages of how much we can do and how fast we can do it.
I suppose this was the first album that we really broke down the tracks and tried to write them in a singer-songwriter way. So we kind of a backbone where we'd take the vocals and then we'd take the chords and put it on piano and play it over and kind of do what we'd been told was like the campfire effect.
Yeah,
so it's like if we can play the track and it's just those bare bones, but it's still like the song still holds you, then you're on a good one. But I think
there's some people that do it just like let's say for instance Adele, like although some people might not like her music, but she does that the best fucking way. Like you don't need anything else apart from a piano and vocals. It makes me wish I could sing though.
What pipes she has.
I know, right? She's lost a load of weight though, hasn't she? I wonder if she's still got it.
I can imagine. What, it must be there.
Yeah, she must.
It's all in kind of head and knees, right?
She needs vocal cords, right?
Still got the power.
Yeah. As long as she's eating well, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and your diaphragm.
Yeah.
Strength.
Yeah, so you might not have as much power. I'm sure she's still pretty good. She's doing good. She doesn't really care what we say, does she? Let's be honest.
Shirley Bassey, she was a little lady and she had the biggest pipes of all.
She had the power.
I think that it's going to be okay.
Yeah, definitely. So have you guys ever worked with a producer on tracks?
Yeah.
How does that work in like a band form for you guys? Because obviously you're quite integrated with each other.
Good, actually. It was in a way because it was separate. we're so integrated with each other, sometimes it's quite hard to
finish
and reach a conclusion that's like good compromise. Sometimes when there's just one person that's separate, that's like, you have to make a decision now to finish it and we'll do it. Otherwise, we'll just kind of push it around for ages and not reach a decision.
We wouldn't have got the Omnitone collection finished.
Yeah.
All or in time if we hadn't have got Ali, like that Charm, to produce the records and help us just finish all of the finish all of the tracks so there's no loose ends.
Yeah, so that was Ali Chant of Playpen Studio, which we've met like ages ago, and then he's just round the corner.
Oh, okay.
Amazing studio. It used to be Toy Box, wasn't it? Studios.
Yeah, Portland Square.
Yeah.
Portland Square. But now, and also kind of we learned a lot from seeing how he'd set out the studio with all the outboard stuff and like how to record properly and just kind of get a better quality of production going on.
Yeah. I guess when somebody's producing, it kind of takes that pressure of actually having to finish it because they can finish it for you.
In a way, I don't think. We don't really trust.
Yeah. Well, you finish your sentence.
We'd never let somebody else finish it.
Without having an external person, it kind of like a three isn't like always the best.
Yeah.
There's not a two against one is unfair, isn't it? Really? Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
But with a producer that is, you know, you're paying for their time to help you on that matter, it's like, if you can trust the person who's doing that, that's the most important thing to us, really, is being able to have that trusted sword to be like, okay, actually, I understand and I agree with their opinion.
Yeah.
Need to pay them. If that wasn't the case, it would be a bit...
A bit weird.
Yeah, we would then be like, we need a different person.
So in that situation, would the producer just kind of be at the back of the room or be actually like doing the engineering, or
it's his studio with Ali. Okay. We've only worked with one producer, so it's his studio at the end of the day. It's all of his gear. It's just us.
It's master of the desk.
What's great about Ali's place is that he's just got so many synths and, you know, drums and instruments and piano and, you know, all of these lovely things that are all plugged in and ready to go. So you can tinker away in the corner, like, and just be on a vibraphone and Katie or whoever can be recording something else. And then Ali can be like, oh, actually, I like that. And he's like, oh, I like that too. And, you know, discuss how you're going to get it down.
And there you've got an idea.
Discussion. He's like, I can hear maybe something high, and then someone might jump on something and be like, what about this? What about that? Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
With this album especially, we used our friends and close people to us to listen to the record and give us feedback on, you know, like, what, because we knew we hadn't finished the production of it. We had just written and like decided on like these 15-16 songs, and we were just like, just tell us what you think, like
like demo stage or like one above,
getting to know that opinion of like what, like feeling out where like a single track could be because of like how good our mates found it or how we already felt about it, and trying to clarify opinions basically.
That's cool. Because sonically, it sounds amazing as well. It's not like, they're not just like, all of your stuff is, it's very like festival music. That's what I kind of like. It's like festival music, and don't be offended by this, but it's like festival music that is like perfect Sunday afternoon vibe. Yeah. Like
the festivals sun. And flat whites.
Say that again.
Festivals and flat whites.
Yeah, exactly.
Brewing that.
Well, you said festivals, and flat white music gets banded about a lot.
Oh, really?
Because it's always on in cafes.
That's
like,
true.
Yeah.
It's always on the playlist whilst, you know, you're having your flat white and a toasty or something.
And chill playlists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got like a festival booking. I think we're playing at like 12 or 1. Mm. So our live show is a bit different because we pick it up.
Oh, do you?
Experiment with the... Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, because the record's it's a purposeful thing, isn't it? We've intentionally made it a record so you listen to it at home, and it's not.
And a lot of the songs, quintessentially, they're pop songs, yeah. Some of them. But yeah. When we play them live, we can make them dance songs, and that's always fun.
They're pop songs, but it doesn't feel like you're trying to make a pop song, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel like the quintessential pop that is played on radio nowadays. It's got a little bit more like, or it's got a lot more like, I don't know, feeling to it.
It's kind of,
it's probably why we don't get paid on radio.
Because you're an actual artist and people take full advantage of us.
It's probably how, like, you know, we love like Roxy Music and Bush and, you know, David Bowie, and like these are pop artists, but their music as well, yes, you can hear the age of it, but they're not singer-songwriter-y pop music. Or it's definitely not what pop music is like now, but they're the people that we have learned from, really. Like,
What's the head guy of Roxy Music? Brian Ferry. I did a show with him years ago in Ibiza. I wasn't playing the show. I used to like work in production, and he was like headlining the show, and it was interesting experience.
What was he like?
Pretty chill. I didn't really kind of like, I just like, it's the passerby. We were doing like front of house and like we were kind of, it was a weird situation. It was in a club in Ibiza. It was for Pete Tong's Wonderland parties. Wonderland parties. And for some reason he booked Brian Ferry to do a live show, thought it would go down really well in San Antonio in Ibiza, which it definitely didn't. These kids didn't even know who the fuck Brian Ferry was. But it was they just played all of the Roxy Music stuff in a club for like...
So good.
It was a vibe. I liked it. But I like it. But I like what you guys are doing. Like, one of my favorite bands is London Grammar. Mm. And they do... It's kind of similar to, and obviously it's a personal opinion, but it's kind of similar to what you guys do. It's like electronic-y, chilled, amazing records, if you know what I mean. And I think there's like, I'm not really in that world, and there just seems to be a massive lack of support in the commercial world to like proper music like that. Because it's just, I don't know why. What do you feel the same?
I don't know, maybe people can't place it or...
Yeah, maybe.
We've always been quite independent, like we're not on a label and stuff like that. So I guess I always kind of thought it was to do with that. We're such a slow builder. but then I mean, if you think about London Grammar, they are huge and
massive.
That like people soak that up. So yeah, I don't know.
Would you ever sign to a label?
Maybe next
depending on the deal.
Yeah. And like kind of, I think it would have to be placed right. Like the feel would have to be right. And we'd have to have a lot of creative independence with how we wanted, like the art and how we wanted to sell it.
Collaborate, like creative, equal creative control, you know, being able to, you know.
You don't want an A&R, do you? Being like, oh, you should do this, you should do that. Like,
that would be bad. It would not work.
It's hard enough with management suggesting things, you know, A&R, like,
just tell Ross to shut up. Just be like, mate, shut up.
Can we get a radio out of this?
That's the worst. Spotify edits. Do you guys have to do them?
What is that?
No, I fucking disagree with that.
Mate.
A radio edit I can get. A Spotify edit, I'm not happy with. What is it?
We talked about this the other day. Can you tell us what it is?
We have to do it for dance music now, and it's soul destroying.
What is it?
Because the way the Spotify algorithm works is that if there isn't a change in the music within the first like 12-15 seconds, the algorithm just fucks you and it will just kind of push people away. So you're kind of making, it's kind of a radio, you're making a radio edit really for Spotify. So, which is crazy because people just don't hear the actual full entirety of the song. And it actually breeds like ADHD listeners that just want to click skip and don't listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a spot.
Cramming like choruses right at the start. There's no nice builds or.
Doesn't bode well for us, does it? our only source of fandom.
Yeah, you can't jam on Spotify edits at all. It's just like. But then there's some people that do.
I disagree a bit. So
do I.
Yeah.
do you make radio? Do you like making radio edits, or you disagree on that as well?
our general time for songs, like unintentionally, is normally around the 4:30.
Yeah, radio hates that, don't they?
we always have like these, like, you know, these build-ups at the beginning, or like an intro that goes there for a reason, and it's so hard to cut that down or cut down the chorus or, you know, middle eight or something. So when it comes to one, we are really reluctant to do it.
Yeah, we might skim off the end a bit.
Some songs like you can get away with, but it's not, they're few far between, I think.
I think it's really strange why...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Radio and all the DSPs kind of expect that from you, because it's almost like they're trying to sell a product that isn't actually the full product. It's like buying a pair of trousers and having them as shorts. It's like, well, what? Like, they went, yeah. And it just like makes everything kind of weaker.
Yeah. How does that work with dance music?
It doesn't. That's the thing.
You need a mixing minute or whatever at the start. So are you making like Spotify edits and then dance edits?
Yeah. So what happens a lot now is that you get all these people giving like promo in like extended versions, but technically they're just the original. So, and then they're calling the original the Spotify edit, which is just, what we do is we call the original edit an original edit, and then we don't call the Spotify at all, like anything. It just goes on Spotify with the track title.
Is it for playlists then? So it's like, right, the algorithm get this, put it on more playlists, and that means that it's two spaces of revenue, isn't it?
A lot of I've heard it a lot, in I've been doing like some pop writing for other people, and they're like, the shorter the better, because you get more replays. So you get somebody that will hit play again. So your track can be like 2 minutes long, and they're more likely to hit play again on the record if it's short.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is just a world of
30-second
tracks.
30-second dance track, so you like get up, hop around, and then sit down. And there you go.
Yeah. Well, it defeats the actual object of what dance music is about, right? And kind of, or just music. It's like, it is about, it's to create an atmosphere of some sort. If you're going from like one track to another, if you just skip through your album, you'll be like, what the fuck's this? Yeah. It's just, it's not a body of music where it should be a body of music. Like,
take you on a journey.
Exactly. Exactly. So when you're writing, when you're like, okay, we want to release an album, and you're like, do you give yourself a deadline, or is it like,
Ross gives us a deadline. Fly over it.
Ross's deadline's always overly ambitious, though. Yeah. And we allow it until we get to that deadline and we're like,
haven't even started.
No, we said that, but can you give us 6 more months?
Yeah.
We give ourselves vague deadlines. Like, with the album, and Brexit and COVID, you know, pressing plants were already in arrears and just like, you know, so delayed on work that we knew that it was like, right, December is the latest we need it sent to all manufacturing. And so we basically managed to get that.
Yeah.
Just about.
Like they originally, I think they said it was like September, and they were like, Ross came around and he was like, you know, the deadline's in a month. And we were like, yeah, that's not our deadline, but yeah. Thank you for the reminder. We'll track on.
Deadlines are the worst.
Yeah.
But it's so hard because then it's kind of, you've got that making time, and then afterwards you've got this hugely long like campaign time, and you're like, could we not have eaten up a little bit of this time to make it? But it's all about logistics, I guess.
Do you ever get to the point where you're like, you've done the album and you're like kind of moving on to other music, and you're like, okay, we still have to talk about the album, although we're getting more excited about other music that we're doing?
It definitely happened towards the end, before the drop of the album.
Yeah,
gone on for so long because we'd finished it like around Christmas, and then we'd been doing that all up until when it dropped, which was 28th of May. Like towards that end, we were like, we're talking about stuff that people haven't heard yet, and it's difficult to talk about stuff like that. But now it's kind of given it a new lease of life. It's nice just talking about the music with people.
How important is vinyl to you guys then? Because obviously, Luke, you're saying you collect a lot.
Big. We sell more vinyl than we do CDs.
Really?
It's kind of, also, it's probably not true, but we prefer selling the vinyl than the CDs.
Yeah.
And it's always in our minds, like when we make the album, like when we were writing the album, we always, like putting the tracks together, it needed to be like 40 minutes around so that you could get it on an LP, and then like kind of thinking about the artwork and
especially
like, as a whole piece,
track listing as well. You know, we weren't going, oh, what's the track listing on a CD? It was like, no, what are we going to be able to get away with, and then what's going to be a nice end to side A to then flip over to side B and get a different vibe. That was definitely the forefront. It always is at the forefront of our mind, the artwork. And
I was going to say, who does all the artwork and the designing? Because it's pretty cool.
We do.
So, yeah.
All three of us. Yeah, Dave does more because we did art degrees.
Oh, really? Amazing.
So Dave did graphic design. Katie did fine art, and I did documentary photography. So yeah, we've all got like.
Our own little section.
We started off as artists and ended up as musicians.
And
we did a degree and we were like, okay, we've made the music. Let's use our art degree.
Did you?
This mother, come on.
Did you all go to uni together?
Dave and Katie did.
Okay, so is that how it all started?
Yeah.
And then Dave and Luke have been like friends since they were real young kids.
Wee lads, yeah.
Wee lads.
But I went to university in Newport in Wales. So
is there a university in Newport?
Yeah, I don't think it's there. No, it is there. It is there now still. But the course that I was doing, it was like one of the only in the country.
It was very famous. It was a really good course, but obviously cool. Newport's not the most happening.
Did you used to party at the Cotton Club?
Yeah, man.
World's famous Cotton Club. I played at under 18's party there when I was like 15, and I think there was more fights there on that night than there was on the over 18 nights.
Yeah, nice. That's how you end a night in Newport.
Exactly.
Make sure you're in a fight. I'm not joking. That's how you end a night in Newport.
End in a fight. Yeah. Had a good night.
Down TJ's. It's a shame that's closed.
Were you from where? Are you from Wales?
I was actually born in Newport, which is funny, but I grew up down by Bournemouth.
Oh, nice.
But I just went back to uni because of the course.
Yeah.
Lived there for a year, and then I was like, no, I'm moving to Bristol. Bristol is much better, isn't it?
And like 15 minutes, like 20, 30 minutes away. It's easy.
Yeah, it's so easy. It's great.
Love it.
Lots of nights spent out, and then Luke being on the sofa and then being like, I can't go to you.
When did you start making music then together?
then, I reckon.
Around then, I've got some like early recordings of us around then when I moved to Bristol. It was mainly like either my house or it was mainly I had the audio interface really, so it's like whatever mic that I had and whoever was jamming in the room, I often was just recording and fucking around with GarageBand.
I can't and it was be all asked like to learn any, at anything all, but... we could find. It was because we were listening to things like Coco Rosie and the books, so it was all just like, you know, scrubbing stuff, weird noises,
experimenting.
When
did it get to the point when you're like, let's fucking do this, let's like give it a go?
You're trying to pinpoint this the other day,
or did it just
into it really? Yeah. You guess, know, like the way the gear has got excessively crazier since then. Like before, like when we started, it was literally like an audio interface and a mic.
Mic looped over the
like a lamp.
The light fitting.
You and I had the cello and I had like drums and me and Dave played like guitar and bass and stuff. But once the first, like when we started like the first EP, I think like I bought an MPC and Dave bought a synth. That was kind of, and Dave started making his own guitar pedals and his own effects. And so it got, from there, it just basically was just us experimenting and, you know, writing the first EP with all of like these little bits in like a spare bedroom that we had.
And just adding and adding.
Yeah. But then when we moved here, which was like our second EP, we then just, you know, bought a drum machine and then bought, you know, more loopers. You got a Helicon and, you know, we've always been into loopers. So we just ended up buying more loopers that or more things that can do it. So we can create
more,
create more layers and layers and layers until, you know, we're doing live shows and it's like, we're actually getting paid for it. And it's like, okay, cool. Figure out a live set. Figure out how to play for 45 minutes or an hour at a festival and be like, right, Boomtown, let's make sure it's kicking.
Yeah, because we dropped the first EP without really thinking it would do much.
Yeah.
And I think we were just very ill-prepared for it. So well. And like, we were all out of the country. You were in Russia, I was in Japan. Yeah. And like, and then we were like, oh, it's
doing well.
And people were like, shows, and do you have a video, and all this stuff. And we were like, no. Which is probably why the next, those 2 years, it took us 2 years to release something afterwards. We hadn't been taking it seriously. And then we did.
That's kind of cool, though, because it's very natural. It's not, nothing's forced, right? And I think that's what kind of creates longevity in a career, is that you're not like, obviously we all have goals on what we want to achieve, but it's like, if it's done naturally, it's so much better.
Yeah. I think as well, we've never had a label like pounding at our door. So we've been doing it independently, which means that it has to be on our own time, because we're working to get it out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it was kind of like, it was only because the music kept doing well that we got the opportunity to be like, oh, okay, let's sack in our day job to actually do this, because it is doing well.
What were you guys doing for day jobs?
I was working at a local organic supermarket.
Amazing.
Doing in the kitchen or stacking shelves on the till.
I liked it when you were the band man. You listen to a lot of Radio 4 and you were full of
Ooh, have you heard this fact?
Did you know?
General knowledge king.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember any of it.
Yeah. I was working at Aardman Animations.
Oh, really?
In Aztec West.
Yeah.
Kind of like started up as a runner, and then I got into the art department. So making tiny things.
I was going to say, were you making all the little?
Yeah, doing like sets and making the small things, and then dressing sets.
That's amazing.
It's an incredible job.
Yeah.
I wish I could do both.
Do you still make crazy little things?
Well, we made the Omnitone objects, so I guess that maybe that was a bit of a kind of.
That's such a cool job. I was in when I got my last tattoos in LA. I was talking to the tattooist, and she was like, "Yeah, I used to be an animator at Disney." I was like, "Why did you quit?" Like, how cool would that be?
Yeah, it'd be so cool.
Yeah, what did she say?
She was like, I think they just make more money being a tattoo artist, really. And I think money talks, doesn't it, sometimes?
Was it a good tattoo? What did you get?
I got like traditional mum and dad tattoos on the back of my calves. So it's like, in hearts. Yeah. But like done in a not shit way.
Like,
yeah, not like a biker gang look, really.
Okay. Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good. So what's the plan next for you guys? I know that's the most boring general question that anyone ever asks, but it sounds
we're just prepping the live show, which is like daunting but exciting, kind of transferring all of these tracks from Swimming Static into like a live version. So it's all clunky at the moment.
I was gonna say, how's that process? Is it pulling all the stems out and then going, okay, how do we recreate this again?
Yeah,
it's a bit of both, isn't it? So some of it will be new and like you're kind of like, how can I recreate this sound? I can't take, I don't know, 10 synths with me. So I'm gonna have to whittle this down, work out how to make those sounds or do something that's similar that gives the same kind of oomph but a sound, different synth.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of break it up so it is like when before Dave would have been playing a synth lead and also like the keys on this and
one arm here, one arm here, and his foot up here. Yeah.
Like guitar Dave, dangling down.
So Dave will generally stay to like the synth and the guitars. I'll do the drums and the bass and a bit of backing singing and the harmonies.
Mm.
And then Katie's got the all the vocal loops and the cello.
Got him singing well more.
Yeah.
This time. I'm like, you're going to have to do this harmony because I put loads on this album. I'm like, I don't know how to make this.
The layers.
I do it all with loops, so I don't have any samples. I'm like, Luke, you've got to sing one half.
Yeah, I'll be there.
That must be quite a fun process, though, because it's like almost bringing a new lease of life to the records, right? You're like kind of you're almost like remixing them. So they're like new versions.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fun. Yeah, reimagining.
Especially with logistics of it, because like sometimes like you're saying with the producing of the song, we've like shortened it down because the original jam was like 15 minutes or something. Now when we're trying to do it, we're trying to copy the like the song that we know that we've chopped, and it's like we're going to need to give myself give me at least 2 more 8 bars of that because I'm not going to get this loop in otherwise. Let's figure out how I'm going to feel it. Yeah,
they kind of morph in that way because if someone's like, oh, I need an extra 2 bars to get this loop in, or at least a contingency of like, if I don't get it in the first time, I can get it in the second time. But then you've got to kind of make that bit exciting while someone's doing it in. So it's not just like, here's me trying to put a loop in. So then they kind of morph and change.
Are you running on a click track or anything?
Just me
on the drums.
It's just the drum machine.
Yeah.
So the drum machines are click, I guess. So it's either a kick or a the two. What is it? One. Two. Anyway. Anyway. Talking nonsense.
Live from Elder Island.
But it's not a click track, but it's a drum machine.
Amazing.
We might have a click track in the future. We're trying to get a new in-ear system, so it is trying to figure out.
Sometimes we need it because, like, sometimes you do those like nice waffy intros without the beat, and then you come in. But if we're on like a day where we're all tired, it's like really slow, and then when everything comes in, it's like working from
drum
first
and bass.
I kind of like that sometimes.
I like it.
Do you guys wear in-ear monitors, or are you literally just like, yeah?
Yeah, we kind of have to really because of the loops.
Yeah.
Like if we have done it without, and also just knowing our own, like hearing like nuances, for me anyway, hearing nuances of just the drums and whether I'm sending too much reverb at a certain point, it's just
too technical to get lost in the like monitor sort of sad because you don't get that like
a kickback though from the PA, like when we did Roundhouse, it's like you're in an echo chamber
you're in the little bass corner, aren't you?
So like, and just if you when it does go up to bigger shows like that, you are really battling with it sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've the whole thought of an in-ear monitor is like, for me, it just would be completely kill the vibe of the atmosphere, right? But what you're doing is a lot more technical to what I'm just pushing buttons.
But it's the feel of it as well. Like, I have to have like a bass cab or something that gives me low end so I can feel when the kick is in and when like the bass is going, because if I don't have that, there's no way I can vibe to the night. Yeah. And like, I'm trying to do these drops, but I need to feel me take it out to put it back in to know it's actually working.
Yeah.
You guys don't really normally have a speaker, but I need that low end just to feel it. Otherwise,
I can't do it with the mic because I loop so much. It just like makes a big ring of feedback.
That makes sense. I get that.
That you can stand on. You can like stand on a platform and the platform vibrates.
Yeah, drummers have it a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
You can get those sub packs as well, can't you?
What?
Have you seen the sub pack?
What, on your back?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I'm going to look into that.
You should get that.
I'm feeling down today. Put it on. I'm at a dub night.
Yeah, a lot of producers wear them, especially in like studios where they can't have like super loud. So it's literally just like a backpack, tiny backpack. It's like a camelback, you know, like those ones you go hiking on.
Yeah, and you get a little straw.
Yeah, literally. As you look at it now, they're pretty. Yeah, it's just called subpack.
Can you use it recreationally?
Yeah, you can link it to your headphones as well. Subpack. Let me
link it to your
headphones. Oh my gosh, it is the future.
Kind of looks like a stab vest, though, isn't it? Do I want that vibe? Like, you start making drill in here. I'm like, oh! Hamish, that. Pre-order now.
They're kind of cool.
Hey, well, don't worry. I've got it.
You should get one.
I could see you rocking up on the stage with your little backpack.
700 quid.
Is it 700 quid?
700 quid, yeah.
Jeez.
Ships from the USA, so expect duties.
That is pricey. Yeah.
Did you say people were using it for studios?
Yeah, a lot of people on their website. I don't know if you can see that, but a lot of people put it on the back of the chair.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's a clever idea. I remember when they launched years ago, but they seem to be pretty popular.
Wonder if they do artist prices.
peasant price.
We're independent. We don't have enough money.
Do you like releasing independently?
Yeah, got so much more control over everything, really.
A lot more pressure. It's a lot more work.
But then it is a lot more work. I think that's why I'm kind of nearly ready to go with something else, because it's just so much.
What type of label would you want to go on, though? Would it be like Ninja Tune? Like, is there like different record labels that are like...
Yeah, Ninja Tune would be awesome.
Ninja. We're a huge fan of Ninja. I guess Warp wouldn't take us.
Warp wouldn't take us, but that would be, you know, up there in the top. XL. Wouldn't take us, but...
Why wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know. It's Richard Russell, isn't it? He's just so... I don't know. He's got an ear for what he likes.
Yeah. Have you read his book?
No.
I don't read books, but I listen to the audiobook. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, nice.
Because it's
good, because I've got too many books at the moment, and I'm reading a Can one, and it's doing me in. Cause
really?
So interesting, and I've like read three pages, and I'm like, oh, why do you keep going on?
Yeah, the Richard Russell audiobook's got... It's got interviews from his artists in there. So it's got like where in the book what his artist would say, the artist actually says it. It's unbelievable. It's like got Keith Flint in it as well. It's just, it's amazing.
Cool.
Oh, that's a really good recommendation.
Sure. But he wouldn't take us, but that would be beautiful. Who else?
There's not many labels out there that are like really strong. I might just not know, but it doesn't feel like there's many record labels, like indie majors, I guess, because that's what they are, isn't it? Like that are really, really strong. Because London Grammar is done by Ministry of Sound.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they do ministry, which is kind of a major, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they're all
majors.
They're all made, like all of the indies are just like subsidized by someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about the kind of web. I'd love to see
the Beggar's Banquet and
the Beggar's Banquet, or like, but or just like if it was all of the indies starting, and then like how they kind of whittle down into your Sonys and your. I'd love to see that.
Well, it's like, is it Universal that just own practically everything? Universal / Warner, just and you don't realize how many sub labels are just underneath them. There's like, I can't remember which one, but one of them has like five dance record labels, and they all compete against each other. And you're just like, what? Like, can't you just work together and be nice?
Love of the
music,
that
would be
man.
a better place. Something needs to change.
What is it that you'd want a label to do though?
It's the kind of outward, it's the promotion, isn't it? Like like PR and that sort of side of things, like social. It just takes so much time away from actually making music.
Could you not pay somebody to do that?
Can't find the right person, Will.
Yeah, and the right PR company.
What are you looking for?
Well, we really wanted to go with them. Were they 9PR?
9PR, yeah.
This time, but they were so busy. We couldn't get on it. And then it's just quite interesting trying to find the right match.
Do you think PR is important?
If you want the bigger, grander things, I guess, like the radio plays, and I guess...
I suppose it's a territory that like you could spend time learning about, but at the same time, then you're spending more time learning about PR than like
making music.
Working on the record.
We've always done well with our music organically, like through Spotify and getting on playlists. Stuff regardless of like the time of our songs, so we've always like angled towards that because we know that we can't afford the money of a radio plugger or a huge press campaign, and it's just something because we know of the affordability. I feel like the majors or the indie majors already have the door. They are the door. They are the people that are inside on the radio, and that market is just It opens you up to so many people to hear your music so much more. It's not that I want to do bigger shows. It'd be nice for people to hear it that haven't heard it and always be like, oh.
Yeah, who might like it?
It's the outcome, isn't it? It's the outcome of more people listening to your music. It's more people listening to your music through radio. They follow you on Spotify. They follow you on Instagram, which then means you could sell more tickets. That's kind of it, isn't it? Which... I think there's ways around it though nowadays. I'm literally having the same battle for like years and just trying to find the right people to do it. And
you run a label, don't you?
So I don't think quintessential like what we think of PR actually is beneficial nowadays. I think
the way it works, you're basically paying people to. They could do nothing, and they could just make up
a website with just jargon on it and just a bunch of pictures that are fake bands.
Yeah,
and just I've got you on this. Happy though, because like 10 likes on Instagram is not a real. This is they're catfishing bands.
Exactly.
Luke's got a proper conspiracy theory about PR.
I agree with you, mate. Like I think it's the biggest load of bullshit ever nowadays.
I'm confused how it works. Like, surely it is the only people that can do it are the people that own all of these companies. I don't know. Like,
for me, back in the day, being on like the front cover of a magazine, being like when people actually used to read magazines, it would be better for everything, if you know what I mean. But I just think nowadays there's other ways to build it. Like for me at this moment in time, I'm like looking at bringing on like a marketing company to like more so just work on like ad buying and things like that for social media. And I think if let's say for instance you were spending $3,000 a month retainer for a PR company, or you spent $3,000 a month doing ads on Facebook, Instagram, whatever works for you guys, I think you'd achieve so much more.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's what we.
I guess that's kind of like what we've done because we've working through a distributor and getting money through that to then push it into ads. Yeah, similar thing. And yeah, it's just about knowing how these ads work and where the money's been spent.
And also finding somebody that's like willing to do it at a good price, because ad buys are so expensive. It's almost turning like PR agencies where you're like, you're how much a month to do what?
The mad thing now is like a lot of the big online like press places are taking money for articles and things for that sort of press, which is crazy way of doing it. But I guess in a way, you could save up money and then get yourself on the front cover of whatever and just pay for it.
Yeah, but you're just selling their magazines for them.
What are they doing?
It just annoys me so much. It annoys me so much, and it's like, what, like
politics?
Yeah, what's it about? Like, we just want to fucking release good music and people to be able to listen to it. Even like the streaming platforms, like I know you guys do really well on Spotify, but even those platforms, if you think about how much they pay you, like considering on how much work you put in to it, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, they've helped us as much as
but it is like on a grand scheme of things, the amount of money that they must have made from
exactly that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And it's like the whole I think Spotify did like a tip thing, didn't they, during COVID, where people could kind of donate to artists through their artist page. And it's like, well, if you just paid the artist a little bit more, like,
totally. Think how many more artists would be able to get that like foot in the door, or get that up and carry on making music.
Well, just think how much more better music there will be out there for everyone to listen to.
Totally.
Which would make the world happier.
Fair wage, isn't it?
Exactly. So have you got dates in the UK, or has COVID kind of fucked it?
No, we're going ahead with it. It's all in October, November.
Yeah.
So starting in Brighton, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Sunny Brighton.
I can't remember what the date is, actually. But it's in October.
5th. Is it on your Instagram?
Check it out.
Let me pull it up quickly, and then we can reel them off. Do the promo bit.
It's going to go for a week.
Oh. Just to tell the world that.
Oh, I don't have... I've only got your North America tour. No. I've got your UK and Ireland tour.
Paper around.
Brighton Chalk on the 9th of October. Newcastle. That is a rough... That routing is rough.
No, there's time in between so it can stop off. I think because it got rebooked so many times, there's loads of like gaps. So.
Have a word with Ross on that one. He needs to sort himself out.
What's this about? Lots of driving. And we will be driving that one.
You're driving. Can't fly that.
No, we wouldn't fly it. Also, we just got too much stuff to fly.
I would definitely fly that.
You can't do this. What about the Earth, man?
Oh, is that why you wouldn't fly it?
I think it's part of the reason, maybe. Yeah. Also, like, the logistics. We've got a van load of stuff.
True. It would be pretty easy jet. It'd be pretty expensive on easy jet, wouldn't it?
I like driving the big vans, to be fair. I quite enjoy it.
Do you drive it yourselves, or do you have a driver?
Yeah. We take turns. So, but I quite like it also, because on tours, I try not to speak in between the shows if we're doing, like, back-to-back shows. So when you're driving, you can just like listen to the music and it's okay that I'm being mute.
Does your voice take a proper toll when you're on the road?
It does. I've learned more about it along the way. But that one America tour that we were talking about where I lost my voice, it really made me, I had to really research into how to kind of keep a longevity to it.
Yeah.
Changed my way of singing really. And looking after yourself. And lots of sign language in between.
It's such a mad thing. Like, as like musicians and like for me, like DJ and stuff, you don't think about having to rest your voice. And then you got all your singer friends that are like, yeah, I'm out for the like, you can't do a show if you can't sing. Where like we can still push buttons and still turn up no matter what.
Yeah. I reckon you get knackered up by the end of it, though, because there must be so much adrenaline when you're DJing, right?
Well, I think it's like doing like 8-hour shows. That's when you're doing like really long sets. It's amazing during it, but it's like a proper workout. It's like, yeah, it's good fun though. But again, it's, people don't realize it's the same. Well, to be fair, it's more so for you guys because you're traveling as a band. It's like the amount of traveling in between the shows is a full-time job.
It's fine.
Yeah. And that kind of, I don't know if it's, it must be the same with DJing, kind of that finishing a show, going, getting like not enough sleep in a hotel or in the bus or whatever. And then usually getting up and then that next bit of travel.
Yeah.
And then starting it all over again.
Have you read the book Matthew Whitaker, Why We Sleep?
No, but actually Ali Chant of Playpen Studios was talking to me about
name drop.
It sounds nuts, but it verified the fact that Dave always wants to work in the evenings, and he was talking about how it's from like when we used to sleep collectively, you'd have watchers that would watch for the first half of the evening and watch us in the morning, and it's whether like you're a morning person or an evening person.
Okay.
That's why I didn't like the book. It's like, no, we can't be working at 4 at the evening.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but I've listened to a podcast that he was interviewed and it was like shit scary on like how unhealthy it is not to sleep or not to have that much sleep, and like the effects that it has on your body when you're just like aimlessly not like having like 3-4 hours a night, and you're like, oh my god, every touring musician is fucked pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah,
like an endurance thing, isn't it?
Just really is, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun though. It's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. Right guys, we've just done an hour and 15 minutes.
Whoa.
Let's wrap this motherfucker up. Thank you so much for coming on. How can people follow you and do all of that? Let's do the promo bit.
Just through our socials, everything, or www.elderisland.com. You can reach anything from there. It is your hub.
Smashed it.
Well,
thanks.
Go get the vinyls. Thank you so much for being on, and let's try and catch up in America.
Yes, yeah, totally.
Amazing. It'd be amazing.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Keep safe. See you soon.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye.
And that is a wrap. Absolutely loved that. Super nice conversation. Love those guys. Thank you for listening. Keep safe. Share it. Subscribe. Comment. See you soon.
As a major research institution, Arizona State University offers the most online bachelor's degree programs, along with world-class faculty and dedicated support. Discover why ASU is ranked number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Tap to learn more.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.